Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, February 27th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, up for revocation, cannabis farmer's permit gets revised instead. Man dies in law enforcement custody following Brush Street incident in Ukiah. And private security firm known for logging protests under fire after viral video. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Redway Elementary School was placed on lockdown late Thursday morning following a report involving a photograph of a firearm, prompting a swift response from law enforcement and school officials. While details remained uncertain initially, authorities have since determined that there was no immediate threat to the school. The lockdown began a little after 11 a.m. after an unsubstantiated threat to a student was reportedly misinterpreted as a threat to the school. A message sent to parents during the lockdown confirmed that all students were safe and urged parents to stay away from the campus and avoid calling the school, as phone lines needed to remain open for emergency communications. Law enforcement remained on site until the situation was fully assessed. During the lockdown, parents gathered at the east side of the school campus expressing concern for the students. KMA News spoke with Cassie Ritter, who received the text notification of the lockdown from the school and arrived on the perimeter of the campus awaiting word about her child, who is a second grader at the elementary school. Due to the threat and out of an abundance of caution, school officials enacted lockdown procedures while law enforcement investigated the situation. KMA News spoke with Humboldt County Sheriff's Office Deputy Corporal Brown.
We got dispatched here for, kind of a convoluted situation where a post on Snapchat was seen of a firearm and a unsubstantiated threat to a child. And the information got misconstrued about it being at the school and a school shooting being involved. And we responded and cleared the school and did not locate any suspect or firearms. All the kids are safe. And it seems like the post was not made today. It was made yesterday and has no involvement with the school at all. And searching the school and clearing the buildings was just precautionary so that us and all the children can still feel safe. This time there's no threat to the school, no threat to the children at the school, and the post was not made about a school shooting upon further investigation.
Though a student and sibling were seen being placed in a patrol car, Deputy Brown clarified that the student was not the person suspected of the initial threat.
Yeah, the students that were put in the back of a police car was the student who had seen that Snapchat, and they were just provided a ride home because their parent didn't have a vehicle. So that was a student and their guardian that was in the back of a car, and we were just giving them transport back to their house.
Following the prolonged lockdown, the Southern Humboldt Joint Unified School District announced that Redway Elementary School would be closed on Friday, February 28th, to allow students time to decompress. In a message sent to parents, the district stated, quote, "Due to the extended lockdown today, we are canceling school for tomorrow. We would like students to take this time to decompress with their families. We will see you back at school on Monday, March 3rd, end quote. Further details regarding the incident have not yet been released. KMA News reached out to the Redway Elementary School principal, Julie Steinle. However, she declined to comment. Additional inquiries to the Southern Humboldt Unified School District superintendent and school psychologist have gone unanswered as of press time. A Humboldt County cannabis farmer's permit was before supervisors for revocation, but she was given a second chance after promising to meet requirements. Daniel Mintz reports.
Contrary to a planning staff recommendation, Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors decided not to revoke a cannabis cultivation permit due to environmental violations, believing the permit holder is earnest about improving. The revocation of a permit for a 10,000-square-foot outdoor cannabis farm in Bridgeville was before supervisors at their February 25th meeting. The permit was approved in 2020 and transferred to the current permit holder, Kathy Hall, in the spring of 2023. Subsequent inspections flagged violations, and by October of 2024, the farm was the target of a search warrant. There were a number of violations, including illegal water diversions from Little Larrabee Creek. Supervisors were shown photos of the diversion equipment leaking gasoline and oil into the creek. Hall told supervisors she believed there was a state agreement in place for diversion from the creek, and the previous property owner made a mess.
So yeah, I know this all looks bad. You know, like we did purchase the farm with all those things, all the cleanup, all the conditions of approval that needed to be met. And we have worked hard. We've worked really hard to come into compliance with stuff, especially the last few months. I think the biggest issue was the water. And the biggest thing there was the misunderstanding that we couldn't pull from Larrabee Creek. You know, we did believe that we had an LSA on file. The previous owners did live on site. And so let me address that really quick too. There was multiple trailers that these people lived in. They did use that water for domestic. All the infrastructure, the pump, the water lines, that was all existing because that they did live there. And we did that cleanup. That just wasn't even really a thing with the county. Like they didn't present that, but we removed a lot of trailers and all the residences that were there. So when we first took over the farm, that was a lot of the cleanup that needed to be done, you know, as well as like household trash. It was, you know, they were living there. So it was a lot.
Vanessa Villari, Hall's consultant, said Hall assumed the previous permit holder's Measure S tax debt and has done a substantial amount of cleanup and compliance work. She said there's been a, quote, incredible cost to do it all at once. Hall is born and raised in Humboldt, Villari continued, and said revoking the permit is the wrong path, considering the trend of farms going out of business. An empathetic supervisor, Steve Madrone, said he's seen worse cannabis farm messes and was open to giving Hall another chance.
I mean, I've seen a lot of farms in my days, and while a lot of things looked bad because of the tarps and a lot of other solid waste debris, so to speak, this is by no means the worst that I've seen or even really high on the scale of really bad. And one of the things that does impress me is the efforts that Ms. Hall has made since buying the property only a year and a half ago or so, to clean up and to actually, I mean, I've heard nothing here today about, no, I'm not going to do that. This is wrong. What I've heard is confusion over some of the requirements. It's obvious to me, if you look in the record, there's a voluminous response and photographs of the cleanup on the site that were presented in the packet that are online here with the staff report and other attachments. And for an individual to jump on doing all of the things that have been expressed in such a short period of time with a lot of inclement weather, to me, is impressive.
But Planning Director John Ford countered the claim of misunderstanding the right to divert from the creek, as not doing so is spelled out clearly in the permit, along with other things like using solar power instead of generators. This exchange between Ford and Madrone focused on the violations and the responsibility for them.
You've got attachments, I think it's 3, 4, 5, and 6, that are all letters to the applicant identifying one of the consistent items in there is the need to clean the site up. So suddenly when we schedule a revocation, we get taken seriously. But before that, we don't. I just want to put that in context because it's a little frustrating to do work year after year after year, not be listened to, but now suddenly things get cleaned up.
Fair enough, Director Ford. I can appreciate that, and I certainly don't want to undermine your efforts, and that's not my intention by any means. That's fair enough to present that. If this landowner had been in charge of this operation for the last 5 or 10 years, I guess I'd probably feel a little different than really just picking it up a year or so ago, year and a half ago. I think that's partly where I'm coming from, in a sense. And a lot of it was legacy of a previous farmer. I do think sometimes people are a little naive about taking on things that ultimately they end up responsible for.
Supervisors weren't up for revoking the permit, so another action will happen. Bringing back renewed and revised conditions of permit approval, including no water diversion, payment of all county fees and administration costs, multiple inspections, and use of solar arrays for power. Those will be before supervisors for formal approval on March 25th. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In other cannabis news, Humboldt County cannabis farmers with outstanding tax or fees due have until March 31st to come current. In an interview, KMUD's Lauren Schmidt spoke with Humboldt County's Director of Planning, John Ford.
So technically, I want to be clear here, the Planning and Building Department does not implement Measure S. The only thing that we do is identify our understanding of the square footage that a farmer cultivated. We pass that along to the treasurer tax collector. So this is not something that's implemented through the Planning and Building Department. From a policy perspective, obviously, we get involved and be a part of the discussions, but the board ultimately makes those decisions. So there was a period where the Measure S taxes were due to be paid in full. Okay. And that was like 2018, 19, probably 20. Then after that, the board either gave a kind of a furlough or said, we're not going to tax for these years. And then they identified that, okay, we're going to start taxing again, but at a 10% rate. And so what a lot of farmers owe is taxation from when they cultivated back in 18, 19, 20. And what the board did back in 2023 is that they indicated that, we would like to get this all cleaned up. And for people who want to stay in the system, they really need to pay their tax obligations. They need to pay what they owe to the Planning and Building Department. So they need to do that by March 31st of 2024. And if they can't pay their taxes off, they need to enter into a payment plan not later than March 31st of 2024 to be paid in full by March 31st of 2025. So obviously that's the date that's coming up.
The tax, Ford says, is largely overdue taxes from 2020 and prior that farmers have known were due for over a year.
And some people owe, a couple thousand dollars. Some people owe pretty significant amounts of tax because they cultivated big areas back then. And so those things are due.
Of the county's remaining permitted cannabis farms, approximately a third of them have made only a little to no effort on remediating their tax debt, according to Ford.
I know there's a lot of requesting going on that the board reconsider the deadline. Coming to these numbers off the top of my head, they're pretty close within like five. Out of 1,440 total permits, there are 900 that are completely paid off. There were 428, somewhere in that range, that entered into payment plans. 28 of those have been completely paid off. 33 of those have paid more than three payments towards their balance. The rest of those, which is in the neighborhood of 370, have really made one, for sure less than three, but for the most part only made the initial $100 payment to enter into the payment plan.
Recent upheaval from struggling cannabis farmers has led to the county's Board of Supervisors facing a decision on how to proceed.
So the decision that's going to be in front of the board is, what do you want to do? Do you want to carry on business as usual and carry forth the plan you put in motion in October of 2023, 18 months ago. And then those folks that are not current on their Measure S taxes and have not paid off their balances with the Planning and Building Department would first be suspended. They'd be suspended for a short time while a revocation hearing is being scheduled, and then their permits would be revoked. Or do you want to do something else? Maybe give some consideration to some of the people who have tried to make a number of payments. Give maybe some consideration to people who have had other kinds of things come up. You know, I know that there are people who worked on their farms and complied with all the conditions of approval, installed improvements, and have all that finaled and haven't paid for their taxes. You know, should those folks be given maybe an extension because they at least were working to comply with their conditions? But then what do you want to do with the folks who, you know, haven't really done anything toward their farm and haven't paid their taxes? And then, or it could just be, you know, just grant everybody an extension. So I'm going to present those options to the board on March 25th and allow the board to decide what direction they want to go. And we'll see.
However, some cannabis farmers speaking to KMA News have said their revocation bills are regarding planning and building service bills that they believe are inflated or erroneous and not in relation to a tax bill. To that, Director Ford says,
I'm always amazed that people don't call us and just say, hey, I got this bill. When I get a bill from my doctor's office and the bill seems crazy to me, I call and ask about it. To me, that's normal. So I know that we're the government and there's all kinds of baggage that goes along with that. But we are here to work things out. We don't think we're perfect. I think that we have worked through a lot of bills with a lot of people to address things that maybe were incorrect. You know, we're perfectly happy to talk to people if they don't think their bill is correct or fair or whatever it is.
When contacting the billing department regarding a virtual visit that a farmer was billed an in-person rate for, the farmer was sent back to building and planning, who then again referred them back to billing, with the issue yet to be resolved. Other farmers are seeing bills, including site visits, costing $800 for a less than 30-minute visit. Others lamenting the mileage, staff costs, technology fees, and monitoring deposits being asked of the farmers in addition to the tax and permit fee costs, making some farmers feel like the county is leveling additional fees on the backs of cannabis farmers due to the county's budgeting woes. KMA News will continue to follow this topic as the March 31st deadline approaches. Please note that some audio in this report depicts violence and may be distressing for some of our listeners. A clash over free speech has led to the revocation of the business license of an infamous Mendocino County-based private security firm, pushing it into the national spotlight. Known for assisting in cannabis eradication on both public and private lands, Lear Asset Management has long faced scrutiny for its role in removing activists from logging protests and conducting citizens' arrests. Now, after a viral incident at an Idaho town hall, the company is under even greater public and legal scrutiny. Lauren Schmidt reports.
Northern California-based Lear Asset Management is a name well known to those in the forest defending community. As local logging companies hired the private security firm to remove activists and conduct citizens' arrests.
Most of my supplies were cut down after HRC and Lear Security sent a climber up here. Lear Security to mostly retaliate against me.
One of the guards was using sleep deprivation technique. Yeah, it is torture. It's a form of torture.
Those last voices were from the 2019 Rainbow Ridge tree sit. The company, Lear Asset Management, has faced local scrutiny, but is now in the national spotlight after a town hall in Idaho erupted into chaos. with three plain-clothed security personnel from Lear forcibly dragging out an attendee who shouted criticism at a local official during the public event.
There's an opportunity for you to sound off, but not right now. And because you're not smart enough to know that, is afraid to leave. She spoke up where these folks are trying to filibuster and shut this whole program down. Unfortunately, they're being unsuccessful. To all of you who are here, to hear the legislators.
Sheriff Norris, this gentleman is assaulting me.
You out now.
This man is assaulting me.
You out now. Let's go.
Three members of Lear Asset Management grabbed the woman, Dr. Teresa Bornpohl, from the Kootenai County Republican Central Committee Town Hall, dragging her out of her chair onto the ground, out of the auditorium, and tying her hands with zip ties. Dr. Bornpohl repeatedly asked the men if they were deputies, as the men were not wearing any identifying markers, which, according to CBS2 in Idaho, is required by law. The incident has gone viral, leading to the city of Coeur d'Alene to revoke the security company's business license. Notably, similar incidents have occurred locally without consequence. In a 2021 report, former KZYX News Director Sarah Reith highlighted that CAL FIRE's Mendocino unit hired Lear Asset Management due to civil unrest, specifically protests from indigenous community members opposing logging in the Jackson Demonstration Forest. Here is Michael Hunter, who at the time was the chair of the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians.
They walked down there and did the same thing again. I said, hey, and I recorded everything. I said, hey, please don't kill me by accident today. And the old man says, oh, it won't be by accident. I got that on recording too. And I said, well, don't kill me by purpose either, please, because I don't fly dying today.
Last week, Matt Simmons, a lawyer with EPIC, wrote in his letter to Secretary Crowfoot that on the same day, Wee Wesley, an activist and Native Hawaiian singer and dancer, had a separate encounter.
Wee was in the forest. She was parked sort of by a logging gate. And while she was there, two men pulled up in a black truck, a large black truck with no license plates. They were both wearing masks, which of course is less unusual now than it used to be, but it can still be a little threatening when you're approached by two masked men. They didn't say who they were. They didn't say, you know, we're with the police or we're with CAL FIRE. They just came up to her and said, you know, you need to leave. And when she said that she wouldn't, they responded by reaching into their pocket and throwing bullet casings at her face and saying that, you know, it's dangerous in here. And, you know, I think any reasonable person would feel that that was a death threat.
While the company may no longer be able to do business in Idaho following the viral video, in California, the Secretary of State's website lists Lear Asset Management, Inc. as having an active business license, which they've held since 2012. However, according to reporting by Kim Kemp at Redheaded Black Belt, Judge Timothy Canning convicted Lear Asset Management of contempt of court in January 2020 at a Humboldt Superior Court hearing. The conviction stemmed from the company's refusal to provide subpoenaed documents related to the case of activists they had placed under citizen's arrest at Rainbow Ridge. Lear Asset Management also failed to provide a reason in response to the court's order to comply. KMA News reached out to the company's CEO, who was the former Mendocino County Fish and Wildlife Commissioner, a controversial character that the Trees Foundation blog post by Chad Swimmer describes as a right-wing mercenary, Paul Truitt. However, we have not heard back as of news time. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
Turning to Mendocino, a 29-year-old Ukiah man died late Wednesday night after fleeing from deputies and later experiencing a medical emergency while being taken into custody near Oar Creek Bridge, according to the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office.
So my name is Quincy Cromer. I'm the field services captain with the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office and also the public information officer. The sheriff's office received reports on Wednesday, February 26th of 2025, just about 7:40 in the evening of a 911 hang-up at a apartment complex that was in the 300 block of Brush Street in Ukiah. There was nothing heard on the 911 line, so using the GPS technology our dispatchers have access to from the cell phone, they were able to trace the call to that apartment complex in the 300 block of Brush Street. So deputies responded just to more check for any signs of a disturbance or anyone needing law enforcement assistance. And while checking the area and walking through the complex, they encountered a male adult subject who immediately turned around and fled from the presence of law enforcement personnel at the scene. One of the deputies there did recognize the male subject and knew that he was on post-release community supervision. We call it PRCS. So it's essentially like a form of local parole when somebody's released early from prison and then they are supervised by the local probation department, but they could be subject to be sent back to prison if they violate that or do local prison time as well. So this person who they identified and knew as from prior law enforcement contacts to be on PRCS, they turned and pursued the adult male on foot, but lost visual of the subject pretty quickly once he ran south of the complex and fled towards the apartments that are on North Orchard Avenue, just south of that complex. We checked the area extensively for that subject, but were unable to locate the person. So they continued to investigate the 911 call and investigate the person they knew fled from them and reviewed video surveillance footage from the apartment complex. And upon reviewing that, they positively identified the person they thought that ran from them as a 29-year-old male from Ukiah, whose name is being withheld at this time. Confirmed that that person is on PRCS, the post-release community supervision in Mendocino County, and then continued reviewing the surveillance footage and identified a truck that that person arrived at the complex in and determined that that pickup was reported as stolen by law enforcement agencies in Contra Costa County. So to continue that investigation, the deputies recovered and towed the stolen pickup and reviewed all applicable footage and surveillance, and then issued what we call an order to an arrest or a BOLO, a be on the lookout is what it stands for the adult male subject for possession of a stolen car, resisting, delaying, or obstructing a peace officer from fleeing from them, and then another section for violating the terms of post-release community supervision. So fast forward last night again on February 26th at about 10:15 p.m., Sheriff's Office deputies responded to the area of the Oar Creek Bridge near Brush Street due to the Ukiah Police Department receiving calls and reports of a male subject heard yelling in the creek area. To further describe the area, there's a creek that runs from Oar Street off of Brush to North Orchard, and there's a bridge at Oar Street, and there's a bridge at North Orchard. He was between those two bridges about 50 yards west of the North Orchard Bridge. So deputies, Ukiah police officers, and California Highway Patrol officers all responded to the incident in the creek to investigate, requested medical personnel to stage in the area due to the nature of the call of somebody yelling potentially for help. And upon arrival, law enforcement located the same 29-year-old adult male from the earlier 911 call. They gave the subject orders and commands to exit the creek. The subject did not comply with those lawful orders. As a result, our deputies and law enforcement personnel entered the creek area into the water to arrest the subject and escort him out of the creek bed. The subject was handcuffed, and he was immediately exhibiting symptoms of an altered level of consciousness while being arrested, not responding to commands, not communicating appropriately as you would expect somebody to do. So it was determined that this person was likely experiencing a medical emergency, so they physically carried the subject from the creek to the nearby bank. And due to the medical emergency, the handcuffs were removed. They administered numerous doses of Narcan, which can help reverse the potential effects of an opioid overdose. There was a positive reaction to the Narcan, so there is a potential that there could have been some sort of drugs involved in this incident, because usually if somebody is not experiencing an opioid overdose, then they wouldn't react positively to that medication. They continued emergency life-saving efforts. They summoned the medical personnel to continue in, and the medical personnel continued emergency life-saving efforts and transported the person to the Venice Health Ukiah Valley Emergency Room. At the emergency room, he was escorted with law enforcement, obviously. At the emergency room, life-saving efforts were continued for approximately 30 minutes until medical professionals pronounced the 29-year-old male deceased at about 11:04 p.m. And due to the circumstances of the entire incident that I just synopsized, the detectives from the sheriff's office did respond and took over the investigations. They contacted investigators from the Mendocino County District Attorney's Office and then the administrators from the other law enforcement agencies that were involved. And the Mendocino County officer-involved fatal incident protocol was initiated due to the decedent being in our custody at the time of death. At this time, there's a lot of things that are still under investigation. The official cause and manner of death is pending postmortem examination or an autopsy, which has been scheduled for Monday. Often with those, they will include like blood alcohol tests and toxicology tests, which can take, you know, 6 to 8 weeks or extended periods of time. So the investigation will continue while awaiting the autopsy report and then the results of other forensic examinations and tests. And then at the end of that investigation, a forensic pathologist will determine the official cause and manner of death for this decedent. So again, I mentioned before, the name of the decedent is being withheld at this time to properly identify and notify the legal next of kin for the 29-year-old male that passed away. And additional information will be released as it becomes available during our continuing investigation. And we are requesting anyone with information regarding this incident or investigation to call the sheriff's office at 707-463-4086 and press option 1 to talk to dispatch. And information can also be provided anonymously by calling the non-emergency tip line at 707-234-2100.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our reporters Daniel Mintz and Lauren Schmidt. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Musick.